Off the Ball, GAA.
I feel we're in such a special place right now in Gaelic football. We're giving it a go. We're trying things out. There's an energy and everyone seems to love it, lad.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. You're listening to OTB's Breakfast Bite.
Jadon Philogene last night became just the third player in the last three seasons to score two first half goals in the Premier League at Old Trafford. The other two, Pascal Gross and Luis Diaz. So just haven't been seen with a Manchester United player. And that was the 12th time since Ruben Amorim took over that they conceded the first goal in the match, which is the most in the Premier League in that period of time. Now, in one way, John, you're castigating the quality or lack of with Ipswich Town to have a man extra for a whole half plus some change and lose to this type of United side. Would you give any sort of credit at all to resilience or at least some sort of team spirit to come back last night from Ruben Amorim?
We could have this type of Man United side. I call them dystopian Man United side. But that would be my description. Now, do you know what? Yeah, I would credit United with a resilience there that a lot of people... Well, there is that accusation out there. They came up against Everton at the weekend, let us forget. Maybe there is something there. It's difficult to know what the vibes are between players and managers. We've had that Garnacho being taken off when Dorgugo was sent off. Yeah. Bad blood there, it would seem. Yeah. He's had to explain it. He said he's going to talk about it in his next press conference. But you've got a redemption arc in Harry Maguire, the player that was completely lost. You know, a man who, you know, memes and GIFs and all the rest of it, you know, on social media. He's come back and shown some leadership. You know, got De Ligt, another player. Most mocks who got away with it a little bit against Everton. He scored. Okay, if you flip it around to Ipswich, the hope of early season, the hope of that first half against Liverpool, that opening game of the season, a bit extinguished. Kieran McKenna has tried a few things, tried a few players. They've not gone without spending a few quid, and it's not quite worked for him. You've got this thing, they've got this thing at the bottom of the table with Southampton, with Ipswich. I can't really include Leicester in this because I have no idea what Leicester are trying to do other than hope Jamie Vardy gets them out of it. But this idea of trying to play the right way, in inverted commas, it hasn't worked for the teams that are at the bottom and are likely to be relegated. We wonder if Burnley come up and Scott Parker, this team that never concede goals, if that's the way to do it. So we go back to some sort of Allardyce, Pulis values. You know, as I say, these things evolve. They sometimes come round again. But in Manchester United, you've got a team... Remember, that took them to 33 points. That's pretty much safety. That means they're not the worst Man United team of the last century or whatever. We've just got to wonder... they've got the game against Fulham at the weekend. That can keep, if they win that in the FA Cup, they can keep the season going. And somewhere within this next few months, while everyone was talking about the rest of the season being over, Amorim's got to find some formula. The thing is, though, when you watch the team, particularly in the first half, because he's so welded to this 3-4-3, 3-4-1-2, 3-4-2-1, whatever you want to call it, the opposition know how they're going to play. The opposition, before every game, have a plan set in place for Manchester United because he's so welded to it. And it feels like, unless you've got the players who absolutely fit that position, that tactic, then you're going to struggle and the opposition are going to take you apart.
Delighted to say we have Professor Lala Khalili with us this morning to talk to us about leverage buyouts of football clubs, a debt burden and what impact it might have on the pitch. Good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. I'm extremely excited to be with you guys. It's not my normal sort of media interaction. And my son, who's an Arsenal nut, is extremely excited that I'm going to be speaking to a football show.
Excellent. Well, the reason that we wanted to talk to you was what's happening at Manchester United at the moment is not a million miles away from what happens in many big companies. You hire a management consultants firm, they come in, they cut, and then we see what happens. It's a big experiment. Maybe before we get into the nuances of what actually happens when a management consultancy comes in, you might talk to us about leverage buyouts and what the impact of the debt burden is on a day-to-day basis, on a medium-term basis, and a long-term basis.
Okay, so I think what is really problematic about this whole process with Manchester United has been the fact that the Glazers, and I don't have to tell your listeners about this, but the Glazers essentially used a leveraged buyout, which means that they actually put a huge amount of debt on the club itself. So using the club as a kind of a collateral, which means that essentially the club went from having a very healthy cash flow to having an extraordinarily massive debt burden. Now, some of that debt is in fixed. I mean, anybody who has a mortgage knows that if you've got a fixed rate, then it works perfectly fine for you, because until that fixed rate runs out, you're safe from whatever vagaries there might be in the shifts in interest rates. But of course, we also know that in the last couple of years, there has been an incredible increase in the basis rate that the Bank of England sets, and so the amount, and also in the US. And so what some of that debt, which is on variable interest, has suddenly become way more expensive than it should have. And so in essence, what you're seeing is that Manchester United is hemorrhaging money. And it's hemorrhaging money not only through the debt repayment or the interest payments on the debt, but also because, of course, they haven't even stopped paying dividends to the Glazer family. So essentially, the Glazer family are using Manchester United as a kind of a cash machine, despite the fact that the accounts of Manchester United are not healthy because of all this debt sitting there. So this is one of the first things to start with and to pay attention to, is that essentially what the Glazers have done is very unusual, even in the context of other big sort of football billionaire football owners in the UK, in part because of that using of the club as a cash machine to get dividends and the massive amount of debt that is sitting on the books. So that's the first thing. The second thing that is kind of problematic is, of course, as you mentioned, that that Jim Ratcliffe has brought in this management consulting firm to fix their problem. What is interesting is that I think they're called Interpath. Is they're not even a regular management consulting firm. They're a management consulting firm backed by private equity, which goes into businesses and tries to restructure them, not only in terms of their organization, which is what most management consulting firms do, but also in terms of essentially, if need be, sort of breaking them into parts and selling them, which is what private equity does. And a lot of Jim Ratcliffe's businesses are kind of private equity-like businesses. In fact, INEOS itself started kind of like a private equity, where he put in a bunch of money, bought distressed, in this instance, in INEOS's instance, petrochemical companies, turned them around through firing a bunch of people, actually benefiting from a moment that there was a massive spike in petrochemicals and just making a lot of money. And he thinks that that model should be applicable to football. And I think you guys probably know better than I do. It isn't. It really isn't. Mm.
Yeah, because it does. It seems kind of needlessly ruthless, the areas that they are targeting the club, that from the outside looking in at the figures, it doesn't take a maths genius to see that, well, these aren't massive savings that they're making. It's more of a morality change and cultural shift in the club. But to what end, really, would that actually take them to success on the field?
I mean, a lot of these kind of big billionaires think that essentially if they come in and they deliver a shock to the system, that somehow things will fix themselves. And sometimes that works out. If you've got a public company where a bunch of shareholders think that that kind of cost cutting looks good for business, the problem is that this doesn't work here, because where the problem lies is in those debt repayments and the dividends that are being given out to the owners, not to the canteen workers that are making some incredibly small amount of money, or to the hot lunches that are being delivered. The other thing that I think is really important to note is that, in fact, it were the Glazers that decided that the club should focus on merchandising and marketing, and therefore they expanded the number of employees so that they could do those sorts of jobs on the side. And now they're just turning around willy-nilly and saying, well, we need to cut these people. So to me, that just seems very standard business world kind of brutality, where you come in and you let go of all your canteen workers and you let go of all your sales guys, and you try to rewrite history, but you leave actually where the club is hemorrhaging money, you leave that untouched. Why? Because it's the billionaire owners who are going to, who get that hemorrhaging, the results of the hemorrhaging benefit from that.